Okay. SOS is a different concept. It's new to the community. I've talked with quite a few people over the years, including Sean Corfield. Everyone here know who Sean actually is? I don't know how well you know the people who are louder voices in the community. And Sean has a history of being, in fact, Sean's byline is, you know, the little thing he puts in the bottom of his emails, is a good thing. Sean isn't afraid to share his opinion. So if you want to look at someone who really knows cold fusion and someone who knows engineering, although I've had to hash out some of our differences over the years, I've really appreciated what Sean's taught. So I showed him some of my concepts, and I've showed others over the years because I was sort of nervous about taking this thing that I was building and sharing it with the whole community for one simple reason. SOS is a different beast than... Let me change to the right screen here. Than the other frameworks. You see, the other frameworks are purely targeted at enterprise development. When Fusebox got started, one of the goals of Fusebox was to make sure that they could take the same concepts and write it to ASP. They wanted to be able to write the same concepts to PHP. That's a noble philosophy. But it wasn't my goals. I have a smaller development company. I'm not running out and typically doing applications for UPS, although I have actually been able to do a few applications that service, some that service Sprint, Blue Cross. I did a big application for Johnson Controls. They're probably the major parts manufacturer that does stuff to automobile companies. And I've got enterprise experience. But the majority of my business is outside the enterprise. Now, if you're going to be doing software development outside the enterprise, how many of you guys do department-level development or you do one-off applications for customers? Okay. Then you will, whether you like this or not, that's okay with me either way, but that means you're going to relate to the heart of why I built this. I built SOS for me, and if you like the tool set I'm using, you're welcome to use it. The community's given a lot to me over the years, and I'm just giving this back as an open source sharing thing. That's what it's called, shared open source, SOS. Okay, what I looked at when I looked at building this whole application is I looked at Fusebox, I looked at Model Glue, I looked at Mach 2 over the years, you know, as I've developed my different versions of this. You know, should I jump to one of those other platforms? You know, what I realized is all of those platforms are built with a single persona in mind, the developer. They want to make sure the developer doesn't get backwashed because it's not enterprise ready, because it's not life cycle. All the goals are good. And all of those frameworks are very good. But they're built for enterprise concepts. What happens when, say, I go to Bob's Auto Glass? He owns a chain of 20 stores around the state, and he wants to be able to check employee time cards and all that type of thing. He wants me to write some applications for him. But, you know, Bob doesn't even have a full-time IT person. If he needs to update these apps and I get hit by a car, someone's got to come in behind me. And if I write these applications wrong, the guy's not going to... I like ColdSpring. I would use it for a project with Johnson Controls if I went back there. But is it right to use that for Bob? You see, he's going to bring a ColdFusion developer in, and we all know most ColdFusion developers don't have a clue what ColdSpring is. If you set inversion of control, They'd say, yeah, I can define each of those words, but I have no idea what that meant. So we look at this, and like it says, and I'm going to read some of these off, even though you can see the slides, because this is also being recorded for podcasts. So, no man lives or dies unto himself, and the sum of the parts is greater than the whole. One of those comes from the Bible, basically, and the other one comes from Star Trek, so you can take that for what you want. But what I did is I approached SOS with holistic design goals. And what that means is looking at the whole group, and it's emphasizing the organic or the functional relationships of the parts and the whole. So what does that mean? Well, if you look at my illustration, what you're going to see is I looked at 8 common personas that are involved with websites, okay? And if you look at them here, we've got the owner, manager, users, affiliates, designers, marketers, DBAs, programmers. Would you say that pretty well covers the common personas that use a website? But when you look at that, let's see, you go to a customer, you're going to pitch, okay, I'd like you to, I'm glad you contacted me. I'd like you to actually hire me and have to do the work for you. But your platform that you're using, how does that actually facilitate you taking care of the owner or manager? And what I looked at here when I was doing these, I actually paired these. I was actually shocked they all fit in groups of two. But your owner and manager, if you're telling someone what is SOS or what does my company do with websites, you know, you're going to make the same presentation to the owner or manager. But if you're showing this to a user or an affiliate, you're probably not going to give your owner presentation to them. The affiliate, I stuck with the user because other than how am I going to make money with this and can you show me my pages, all the affiliate cares, like if you're doing a ASP application where they can reuse some of your stuff, all the affiliate cares about is the user experience, really. I mean, how are you going to encourage the user to buy? How are you going to encourage the user to subscribe to this? Your DBA and programmer, we don't always get along, but we think more alike than the other groups. We would basically want the same presentation. And design and marketing, and if you guys ever, you said you worked for a university, don't all the designers work in the marketing department? It's almost always true. So that helped me a little bit. I knew what the major personas were, but I also had groups so I could think of the features. And, you know, as I look at this stuff, how can I build my framework to support these things? You cut it down to 4, you get less things to think about, and that's always good. Well, your owner basically, let's just breeze through these. Your owner wants a personalized look. He wants it to be simple to use. You know, if he can't use it, the user sure can't. He wants lots of features. He wants it to be easy to expand. He wants it to be as low cost as possible. They sound like your clients. And he wants support, of course. After the fact, if there's an issue, I want you to do a whole bunch of stuff for free, but if I've got to pay, you know, I want it to be as little as possible. What about your manager? Now, that's the guy who works for the owner who's actually going to be working with you, not the guy who decides he can pay you, but the guy who has to do the grunt work. He wants it to be easy to manage users, easy to manage group permissions, easy to manage applications if he does anything on those levels. He wants it to be easy to update. He wants if it's interacting between other sites, he wants to know about that. You know, he's after the day-to-day actual management stuff, and if he doesn't know about it today, over the next 10 years, if you keep that client, each of these things will be things he actually thinks about. Now, what about the user? Okay, the user, he wants it. First thing a user wants, he hits your site, first impression. Do I like how this site looks? Now, and we're developers. We are the least design-oriented group next to DBAs. Now, the DBAs might say, no, they're one step above us, but I'm going to claim we're above because we actually do actually more design. And yet, when you go to a website, isn't that the first thing you do? See if you like how it looks? Now, just being honest about us, if we're doing that as developers, what are the users doing? So, you know, that's an important feature. It has to have a pleasing look. It needs a friendly interface. And I'm going to speak to this in a moment, but when Windows became big, Linux started getting bigger on the desktop, and all these Mac became big, isn't it funny that when you start these things, they've all started to develop a common interface? They all have menus, and they're getting more and more common, and people are getting where they can swap back and forth between the systems without a problem. Does that have any application to the web? Why are we building each website totally oblivious to user interface? And are there things that we can do to facilitate making that easier for ourselves? I sure hope so. And when I was, of course, showing this to my family, any of you guys ever test presentations out in your family? I commented that one of the things the user wants is a single authentication. He wants to sign in one time. Well, that started a discussion, and we determined what the user actually wants isn't going to happen. User never wants to sign in. He just wants it to recognize him securely. SOS doesn't solve that. You can make some money if you solve that one. Well, the same thing, we talked about the affiliate already. And, of course, we're all familiar with this. Your DBA, he wants secure data. He wants logging backups, integrity, a data layer, normalization. Your programmer wants good code reuse. I want to be able to write stuff I can use over and over as much as possible. I want maintainable code, not just so someone else can read my code, but so in 6 months when I go back and look at my code, I'm not saying, why did I do that? And we've all learned to be developers, so if you're all a experienced developer, you still have code that you scratch your head. Why did I do that? You want a better team environment. Here's a concept. What if this old code that you wrote that's running on your website, anybody in here been developing back as far as Fusebox 2 or before? Well, when you did that and they went to Fusebox 3, do you remember what happened? We had to rewrite our applications. They didn't really run right on the same site. So either you kept writing everything in Fusebox 2 or you went to 3, and then went to 4 and it broke again. Now, part of why I brought up Sean is I used to be a strong part of that community, and I really appreciate that when Sean went to Fusebox 5, he made the application run Fusebox 4 code. So I give Sean double kudos on that. And pretty much they're doing the same thing with Model Glue. They haven't come out with another major version of Mach 2. Has been features to add to it that they would need to consider a major version. So, but I looked at those same things. What if we get set up and we've got different developers using different methodologies? Well, wouldn't it be neat if you could have a simple methodology for those one-off quickie projects, standalone templates, and you've got something like a Fusebox app with a switch application, then you could build model view controller methodologies. Imagine having a framework that supported multiple methodologies that all ran on one site. You're learning to program, you can start out with the simple stuff, build more complex, and they're all running on the one site. I built that in. It wasn't as hard as I thought to do it. It was just hard to figure out a way that was simple to do. Figuring out the simple stuff is the hardest part. But what I've come up with is actually simple. And we've got other goals as developers also. I'm not going to go over them all because hopefully we as developers know what our goals are. Well, design guys, you know, they're worried about CSS, separation of content, presentation, colors, layout. A designer would really, really like it if they could change the design without having to look at our code. If you ever worked with a designer, you know that would be a dream to them. Then you got your marketers. They want to know about search engines, usage patterns, how do I build in ad banners, all of that kind of thing, okay? Well, let's look. A lot of people here, anyone heard the phrase design patterns this week? Yeah. Design patterns are a very important part of developing scalable enterprise applications that are supportable, lifecycle maintainable. But you know, there's other patterns. And one of the things I want to briefly look at here is technology patterns. All computers, personal computers, basically used to have a command line interface. The CLI, as it's called. There was CPM, and DOS, and Unix, and there was others. And when they ran, each application sort of had its own look. And if you ran something like PFS Works, you had PFS Write, PFS Calc. Some of you guys may remember those programs. And they worked real good, but if you wanted to use Lotus Spreadsheet with PFS Write, you were out of luck. What you had to do is copy that section of text from your spreadsheet, save it onto your hard drive or floppy disk, quit the program, load up PFS Write, and pull the file in. It's like, boy, that was crazy. Then the strange thing happened. What happened from there is we had windowed applications, and these windowed environments started coming out with other features and another perspective. And I think you're going to be able to see real clear how this should apply to what we're doing with the web. Well, they had the Amiga, the Atari, the Linux. You had the Mac, Next, and Windows. And there's some others that they had also. Well, what these had is, if you think, why did those things replace the command line systems? Was it just because it was better for developers because we had an API to program? No. You see, there's people who were owners of businesses that were buying computers, and people who were managing the computers. You had developers, DBAs, and what happened when we went to the windowed system, which uses more resources? Does anyone realize that Windows is not as scalable as DOS? Isn't that an interesting thought? Which is the right thing to, well, you know, if scalability is the number one priority, when you go back home, make sure you tell everyone in your company we're doing away with DOS, Linux, and Mac. We're going to be running Windows, Linux, and Macs, we're going back to DOS because we want to be more scalable. That's a lot crazy. So when you look at the windowed environment, does anyone recognize this one? I got a picture of the Amiga workbench up here. That's the first windowed environment I worked with. I got to use a video toaster and all kinds of cool things like that on the Amiga. But the guys didn't know squat about marketing the system. So that one went by the wayside. Having Windows alone wasn't enough. So what you did is we started out with a command line interface, and we moved to these cool Windows interfaces. So that's why we started out with like a DOS system, and then we got these cool Mac interfaces, and you click a little button, all of a sudden you can see all the applications that are open on your screen. And you go to a particular one. I mean, those features didn't exist in DOS. That's a user experience issue. But that API that lets you program that, do you think when you write an application for Mac, you have to include that feature? No. When you write an application for Windows, do you have to write a subset of your program to tell it how to create the menus? No. Then why are we rewriting every last thing we do for web applications? Anyone ever hear this product coming out called Apollo? It's the next, basically, It's Flex plus web development packaged together, running on a desktop. Do you know what that's about? This exact thing. The direction the web is headed is to change everything to the user experience, not just, well, how can we do the minimal required so that a user can use my application and get a developer to do some curtains around my application so it looks nice. See, we're actually getting to the point of reconsidering the rich interface, the RIA we all talk about, RIA. What we're talking about is including the user in our considerations again. It's not just making sure the user can get his work done, but actually, how does the user like to do things? We're going deep back into the whole persona concept. So we've got a common user interface. Even if we stylize it, do you realize no matter how much you style Windows nowadays or how much you style a Mac or how much you style your application that runs on Linux, if you don't stay with a common user interface, it's a lot harder to get adoption. Your software just doesn't get adopted. So if you're going to prepare, and I will call this a software prophecy, if you're going to be ready for 5 to 10 years from now, if your software isn't fulfilling these goals of considering all the personas, and it probably will be, but the question is, are you going to be ditching what you're writing today? The idea is to give your software as much longevity as possible. So if you happen to be using Mach 2, Model Glue, Fusebox, all these concepts can be built into those softwares. They're not standards, so you're not going to have a couple of the advantage that I'm offering, but, you know, personal styling, common authentication, application sharing. Now, if you think about it, Amiga DOS, we talked about DOS and then the windowed environment. DOS was the platform, but the Amiga Workbench I showed you ran on top of DOS, okay? Anyone ever hear of MS-DOS? We call it the, what's the thing in Windows we call that? Is it CMD? We type into the run line to get it to run. It's the command line. Okay. But what ran on top of that? Anyone know which version of Windows actually turned the tide? It was Windows 3.11. That was called Windows for Work Groups. You see, that was the first one that actually considered the administrators and things. And that's when you got basically people who could learn a common interface. Well, it was a common way to administer all users that had a single point of login. And when you had that holistic approach, a word that I rarely use, but when you had that holistic approach to software design, to systems creation, that is when DOS started falling by the wayside. The argument that DOS was faster and DOS was more scalable, I heard all those arguments back then. So if we're going to look at our patterns, okay, not design patterns, but technology patterns, usage patterns, then we've got to realize, what direction is the web going to head? Why did Adobe buy Macromedia? For the Flash platform? What's that? The Flash platform. The rich user interface? Oh, you mean they're taking a holistic design? If you've ever wondered why I couldn't figure it out, now you know. I didn't get this straight from them. I'm not part of the company or anything, but I can figure out what they're after. I may phrase it different than them. So what platform do we all use? We're called Fusion developers. I think everybody here is or considering it. Well, SOS is nothing but a framework that runs on top of Cold Fusion, okay? And what that does is, when you look at Windows, Windows is definitely different than building a site for the web at this point. Although with Apollo and stuff, some of those rules are changing. But when we build a web app, what are the common features? Well, basically sidebar, nav bar, header, footer. We've got some common things that are just common to applications, okay? Well, why do we use frameworks? We'll come back and visit what we can do with that in a moment, how we can benefit our development. But basically, frameworks provide for more rapid development because they teach us to think in a good use pattern. And if you don't have to rethink everything, that's going to help you out. Well, basically, frameworks should give us a broader set of features. Part of code reuse is taking common things that you do and dumping them in there. Did anyone here go to the sustainability conference yesterday? That's conference session. That was one of the things that was discussed there, and a couple of the guys that are talking about application generation, which I'm working on some tools to do that also. What we're trying to do is take those common things we do and package them up in an unobtrusive way, and what that means is we don't want to force you to use anything, but we want to make sure that we facilitate you using those things so when it's appropriate, you can get the benefit from them, but unobtrusive so they're never in your way. And that's the way good software design should be. Every one of us guys who get up here all have our own definitions. Well, that's mine. I have the right ones. So. Well, centralized management, improved integration, like I was talking about multiple methodologies running on one site, have different level developers or have a system newer developers could train on. A company's going to pull on a full-time IT developer. And they want something that they can afford someone within their vision, but someone can move up and make better applications and have them all still run side by side, or take a new methodology that he hadn't used before, new to him, and replace the old app without breaking any links. Well, that'd be pretty cool. And I've just talked about that. We want our frameworks, two major goals for, since we're at the frameworks convention, is having our everything we do to be extensible and have it to be unobtrusive. So as we look at these things, now how can we do that with SOS? Actually, let me back up. Okay, we'll take a look at it here. I only use basically one XML file, and one of the things that I'm going to be adding to that XML file is a config editor. Right now, I'm sorry for you guys who don't like XML, but temporarily you have to get into the XML. And one of the strange things that actually is true with SOS is, say you don't like XML. You like everything in a database. You know what? The API object that's part of SOS is extensible. So we have a core object and then one you actually call that extends the core object. So what you could do is you could write a custom rewrite of the method that calls the API and call the configuration from a database. So you want to use a database, go ahead. Modify it, just make sure it has the same features. You can use a database. I'll keep using XML. And if someone else wants to hard code this into a regular script, well, use the extension, go ahead, hard code it, and there you go. Now that's a little bit different way to approach it, isn't it? So what we're doing with the framework is giving you a construct, giving you one solution, but if you want to, this is your style of development, go ahead. And when we upgrade, you'll be able to just modify your extension, and the parts that you aren't modifying, those will be in the upgrade, but you're not modifying the core files, which means that's kind of nice. Since you're not modifying the core files, you're going to be able to actually make this thing. If you have specific goals, specific requirements at your company, at your institution, this is going to facilitate that. And that's what I mean by extensible, but not obtrusive. It's not getting in your way. Okay, so it's providing the features without driving them in your way. Now, one of the things we do a little different in SOS is usually we think of there's two common thoughts of what a web application is. The first thought is, okay, well, Cold Fusion's the application. I know that because it has a tag called CF application. Well, yeah, they named the tag wrong. And unlike one of our other fellow speakers, I'm not advocating we boycott the tag, okay? Those of you who have heard the thing will know the humor there. We don't need to boycott the tag. We'll just deal with the anomaly. Well, so what do? When we build websites, another guy says, well, I've got the frequently asked questions application, and I've got this forum, and I got a shopping cart. Those are my applications. Yeah, they are, but the way we build websites, actually, it's more like a collection of applications. So what you have is like you'll have a shopping cart program, then you usually nest right in there. Some guys actually build them side by side. But you have a shopping cart application, and then usually nested inside there you have an administration application. And sometimes people even build other nested applications inside there. So really those are the apps. So when you look at the config file, you're going to see bundles, and then you're going to see apps. And that's what it's talking about. The bundle is the collection of apps that make up a larger application, like your shopping cart. Whereas the app is the little app that's running inside it. So there's nothing real difficult. You look at the XML file that's the core, and this will help you see some of what we've provided with SOS. But you see, okay, well, why do we have in our bundle name, title, admin, stuff like that? Well, what we're actually doing with that is, what we're doing is we're setting up all the configuration and stuff because we have one methodology called standalone templates. We call it SAT. And what standalone templates let you literally do is you can call that template directly. It's 8 o'clock. That's my claim. But you can call it directly just like you would a regular non-methodology Cold Fusion framework, and it still grabs the full API. Well, that's kind of neat. But if you want to do the thing that the rest of most of the frameworks are doing, and that's how I like to develop, then you're going to pass everything through a single index file, and you could use action equals your app name and the controller you're calling, or the core file with SAT, or the and a switch thing. It's your same idea as fuse action, okay? Except instead of saying app action, I call it app controller, because in SOS, you're calling the controller. Whatever methodology you are, that's the controller. In standalone templates, it's referring to the actual template name you use. That's the controller. Maybe calling CFCs, maybe including other files, but it's controlling what's happening for that request. With your switch file, which is similar to the concept of Fusebox 3. Anybody here have any Fusebox 3 applications hanging around? Well, if you did, you could basically rewrite them into switch really easy, which is why I created switch. So that's what we've done, and we've built a lot of those common features in there. Now, let's see how good I can do this in reverse. Okay, I need to get a web browser over there for you guys to look at. Actually, if I can get my mouse over here. Oh, that's right. Okay, down. Well, you know what? Let me minimize this. Well, I can't get my mouse off that screen, so let me do the old. Let's see if it'll let me out. There we go. Okay, in just a moment here, if you'll hang on. There we go. Now we can both see the same screen. Most of the same screen. Not as soon as my hard drive catches up. But does anyone have any questions so far about the basics and the goals of the framework? Do you see why? And what I'm after is basically a different tier and a different mindset of development. I like the enterprise concepts. My company's motto, I don't think I mentioned it at the start, if I did, but my company's motto is technology that reaches beyond the enterprise. Because I have a lot of clients who want enterprise technology, but they don't want it in an enterprise package. Do you know, there's a lot of companies that need a truck to move stuff now and then. But most companies that aren't real big, anyone ever hear of Dunkin' Donuts? Okay, how about Starbucks? Now, when they put a Starbucks in the local grocery store, sometimes they have a loading dock. But how many of you guys think that Dunkin' Donuts builds loading docks so they can have a real enterprise-type business? That'd be ridiculous, wouldn't it? But, I mean, is that an enterprise? Well, it's a different kind of enterprise. And what they do is they build technology that's appropriate. And the same thing is we're building websites. How do we do that? How do we build technology that's appropriate? Well, let me load this back up. Okay. Well, I've got to go into my config file here, speaking of which. What we need to do to build technology that's appropriate is we need to be able to support different levels of developers. And we need to be able, one of the things we've done in SOS is we've created a skin. Now, how many of you guys have ever skinned your media player or anything on your computer? You know, different look for your media player, swapped them. Wouldn't it be nice if you could build your website so instead of having a layout or a template, you could do more of a skin technology? Now, what does that mean? Well, what that means is, you know, your sidebar? What if your sidebar actually had a little personality to it and you've dealt with your sidebar in a whole different concept? Think of content and presentation being separated. Now, most of us, all we think about when we think about separating content and presentation, all we actually think about is, well, I get my clips to run here. There we go. All we usually think about is we think about just a common layout. But what if you could say, well, you're building your sidebar? What if you could build that sidebar in such a way that your what you end up with is, I'm going to add some of my sidebar, and later on I want to append or prepend my sidebar. Now, is that something that you might commonly do? Like, say you go into your shopping cart, you go into your shopping cart admin, and in your admin for your shopping cart, you want both of those to be there? Well, yeah, that'd be a common function, so that'd be regular code reuse. So we built that into SOS because we wanted the common code reuse. So what we get here okay, what's the number on that? Good, that's where I thought it is. Okay. What I'm going to do is set this one as invisible. I had an issue with my hosting provider. So since I'm on the test system, here's a nice little feature. Have you ever had software you wanted one configuration so it would run in one place but not another? You know, we all know if we're building software, you're supposed to have test, live, and build versions. Build is usually for your local machine, or you've got a common build system for a department. You've got a test system, which, of course, we all do that. We all put our software in a test system before we deploy it, don't we? It's a nice thought, isn't it? Well, this facilitates it if you care to do it. And then you've got your live server. Well, I've got this application, and I sort of left it like this because I knew that, look at that. I try and run the thing, and I'm getting an error, okay? So what do I do to deal with that? Well, okay, right now I'm showing someone something in my test system. So I get rid of test, and you can see this if we go to the left side, that this is for the blog app. Okay, so I go ahead and save that. And what I've done is instead of recompiling every time my application runs, who thinks when you recompile every time your application runs that your website's going to run, that development will be faster? Now, I like the fact that it could recompile, but I got thinking about that. So, you know, how should we really deal with that? Okay? Open quote. You know what I've got here? I've got an issue with an open quote somewhere here. Okay, and as you can see, of course, SOS has the common debugging features also. Okay, page 57. Okay, well, let me just call. Now, this is the way it always works in a presentation. Nothing ever goes exactly like you want it to, does it? Okay, you see my directories here? Well, I have site files. And then my root application has its own bundle settings, its old bundle sidebar. And here I have this methodology directory. I'm working on a couple of others here. And Pivot's one I'm working that has some advanced features to actually support Flex directly. Imagine if you, anyone here know what TIBCO is? It's a popular Ajax thing. Imagine being able to build your website so that you could have an HTML interface, but the same application could also directly feed TIBCO apps, which are Ajax apps, or it could feed Flex, or it could feed Apollo, and all of these apps are being fed by the same system, so you've got common logic feeding that and different logic. That's one of the things that we have achieved with this. And what I do to help facilitate that is, you see here, anyone here use application CFCs? I have a philosophy that none of your core files should be touched. If your core files are touched, you put all the things at risk. But the thing is, we usually put our app name in a core file. So say I want a different application namespace. All I did at the top of my core file is I include this. And say we're going to call this version 5. We save that. Okay. And there's my browser. As soon as it appears here. There we go. Okay. Well, you know what? I'm going to just take that bundle app out of my listing at the moment. Okay. Thank you. Okay, like I was saying, so you change that. Now I'm going to have to research that. I'll show you what the files do. And speaking of which, if anyone here gives me your email, I'm planning on doing some presentations offline on how to actually develop this stuff. So I'll be glad to give you more direct presentations and figure out what this one issue is. What happened yesterday, I did something you should never do before a presentation. I have a shared hosting provider that started mapping their directories. And what that means is now we put everything in our directories. Well, I had a blog directory and I referenced that directory. But when I deployed everything to the new server, several things didn't work because they were mapping these directories like blog to someone else who was on the server. Like, you're mapping a directory called blog? So I can recommend some hosts. I've talked with several of the gurus here who can prevent that. But this is the core site, and what you can see here is I've had to remove blog from my core site. I just didn't double check that I didn't change anything here. This was obviously not a release. I checked the stuff I changed for a release. But you want to go to the About Us page? See, these are extra links. Do you ever notice that a lot of sites have a few common links that everybody uses? How many of you guys put About Us pages on your websites? How about a Contact Us page? See, those are very common. Ooh, that's scary. Change that. Well, there's your contact page, which I will be putting more information later. And, you know, different news releases and stuff. Well, those are pages, and you're looking at the live website. But I thought about it. You know, we talked about user interface, right? Anyone ever have a customer who has computer screens that are too small? Or they got like this micro mini laptop? And they're saying, well, it doesn't fit on my screen. You got the micro miniature laptop. Most of the web doesn't. Yeah, but I want my site to work for everybody. And you've got to deal with it, whether you like it or not. Well, how would you like it if this little sidebar thing over here, wonder what that is? That little sort of thing sitting there. Wait a minute. We're running Windows. Anyone ever take this thing because you had a screen that was too small and make it so it hid the application bar on Windows? I've done it. My screens are bigger nowadays. I don't do it anymore. Wouldn't that be cool if you're trying to read a page and you want to get that out of your way? You just click the button. It's gone. Well, it's not totally gone. If I want it back, I just click on it. One of the things we've done is those core skin elements of SOS, we've built those in such a way that even though I'm using JavaScript, it's not going to, they're built with direct JavaScript, none of the tricks of JavaScript, none of the gurus type stuff. What that means, anyone here ever hear of Prototype, Scriptaculous, jQuery, these Java libraries that are already worked out? Well, wouldn't it be nice if you're going to build skins that, and you tell your developers that, yeah, you can do some of that JavaScript stuff, but the stuff you do in the skin has to be unobtrusive. Just like CSS keeps things from interfering with each other, your JavaScript has to be the same way. So the developers for the content section of the page, and you see this section here is your content. For the content section of the page, I want to be able to use the library I want in my application. So maybe I'm going to use jQuery for this application, and maybe I'm going to pull in some legacy code, and I've written several applications with Scriptaculous. Okay, for those applications, I'm going to use Prototype and Scriptaculous. And you see, because those libraries are separate issues, you can pull them in. That's pretty good for code reuse. You want to buy a shopping cart from someone else because the one you built doesn't match and this customer's got a tight deadline. Well, you buy it, and he wrote it for SOS. You drop it in here and deploy it to the website. Well, there's a different concept. How many of you guys have ever tried to buy two or three applications and then make them all run on the website? I've done it. I've tried it twice. I will never do that again with the common frameworks out there because I do not support application sharing. What do you need for common application sharing? You need common authentication, separated out, and you need a common look and feel, separated out. You see, that way when you put his application on this site, this is what it's going to look like. That's kind of a neat concept. You don't have to change how an application looks to run it on your site. You don't have to change authentication to run it on your site. And you could, like I said, use Fusebox, Model Glue. You could build some components like that. But how do you get our industry to accept any standard unless the people who make the application make one standard one that can be used for application sharing? And yes, I'm trying to push them to do some of these same things. I don't want to be obsolete. Right. But I'm talking about the authentication model. If you wrote an application and I wrote one, well, the truth is I've been on a few betas for Cold Fusion, and to date I haven't even seen the core beta developers who really use the standard Cold Fusion authentication. And I have a personal problem that I happen to hear Michael Dinowitz had the same problem. If you want to do a roles-based authentication inside of Cold Fusion, it's an AND-based authentication. But you put in, okay, he has to have these roles. But what if you, say, want a person to be an editor and staff or an administrator to view this page or to view this link? How do you deal with that? There's no construct inside Cold Fusion that takes care of the ORs. So what I did in the core user object, I have this thing called, method called dot is authenticated. And I do my ands just like the roles because I'm trying to follow this common thought as much as possible. The ands are separated by comma. So what I would do is staff, comma, editor, then you're straight up and down pipe. Admin. There you go. Well, wait a minute. We talked about building these things for administrators and managers, right? So they don't keep calling us up as web developers. I need to change the permissions on my site. Could we change it to this? We've changed our org chart. Wait a minute. What if we took and made the permissions a little more abstract? What we did is we hooked users up to groups, sort of like an org chart. And then we give the groups different permissions. Okay, wait a minute. We're giving the groups permissions? And then anytime you want to change all the people who have permissions to something, you can just change it in a group instead of... you get a website, say this guy has 5,000 customers that maybe hit it 5 or 6 times a month. That's the level of website you build. But now you've got to go in and write queries to update all these permissions. That's a little ridiculous. How about this? How about we just change the permissions for the users group or the members group, whatever he called that group. So we've got and plus or checking on our roles. We've got a little abstraction, and that's, I think, a problem with our current model we're using for authentication. Is we don't have abstraction. Oh yeah, and Liz told me to have you guys fill these out. So that'll help also. And that abstraction is built into the model for SOS. And by the way, it's open source. It's free. So if you want to steal that and use that for Fusebox or Model Glue, you could hijack that. If nothing else, that'd be worth coming. Nice to have a simpler, friendlier, more versatile authentication system. That's definite. So But does that give you, and you see we have a common nav bar, and another thing I want to show you is, I can show you that in the code. Okay. I'll let you actually, we'll go into the blog, even though it isn't running right here this morning. We have our common index page, okay? But you see here, what we do in our SAT applications, because the page can actually get called twice the way, and this only happens with things in your root directory. So in our root directory, we always just make sure that we wrap it like this with a CFF. And what I do is I just stick that in a snippet. Whenever I create an SAT page, I just run the snippet and I got it. Okay? Another thing I like to do is use the import libraries. So you could do CF underscore if you had a common tag directory. But if you look at my stuff, I'll typically have my tags set up like that. And that way you can tell which ones are SOS skins and which ones are different. But see the skin tag here? Let's say you're going to take this tag and you say, you know, when I call a website, I need my search engines to work, okay? This is just making stuff easier again. And yeah, you could put all that stuff in the header, but remember one of our goals is to let the designer build the design and keep us as far away out of it as possible. That helps us because we don't have to fight each other about issues. Well, let's look at the page source here. What you see is we have these things up here, which we're familiar with. Here's our meta tag for description, our meta tag for keywords, and here's our title. You know where those come from? Those are the defaults that come from the config file. So if someone doesn't put it in, when a search engine hits our pages, we're not coming up blank. But what if we want to modify it? We get a shopping site and we want to sit there and modify those issues, and these are the type of things I'll be showing in the broadcast. You know, how do you do these things with Cold Fusion? Okay, what you do, if you want to add a title, you'd go title, write in your skin tag, there you go. And same thing for keywords, description. Think you could add those fields to your product listing in your shopping cart? And then you just put them up here. Always do your logic before you get to your skin. When you're inside your skin, you should be doing content, not business logic. Make sure they stay separate so your code's reusable. But does that make sense? I mean, that's just a real simple way to do it. You read the code, okay, there's where the keyword is coming from, that data field. Or I want to always in the shopping cart include this one, comma, the rest of the keywords. That's kind of nice. Another thing we can actually do with SOS is I have the API has, you know, we talked about your site. Well, if you put underscore site, you can have it CF dump all of those variables. So you, while you're developing, you can say, okay, here's all my site variables. And I use what are called absolute dynamic references. Don't remember the word. All that means is you can go underscore site dot root dot path, and no matter which directory you have off your web root, it'll know. I type in that alias, and now no matter where my application is deployed, maybe my deploy environment's different from my build, it's going to work. Same for your bundle, underscore bundle dot root dot class path, and that's your class path for calling CFCs that refers to the root of your bundle. And the same thing goes for apps. And there's really a ton of features, and I'm going to get these up this weekend after I switch hosts when I get home. But if you check out my site, it'll have those things on there. And if you have any questions, I'm going to be around a little. I'm leaving a little early after lunch today because I've got to catch my ride back home. But if you have any questions, definitely email me. That's our website, www.sosensible.com. And contact me through there, too. And I do answer. And even if you have some of these goals for the other frameworks, let me know that. I'm familiar with the frameworks. Because remember, our motto is taking the enterprise technology beyond the enterprise. So I know what the technology is, and I would really like to help the community start employing some of these benefits and just make our whole lives easier for the other frameworks also. So, thank you. Speaking of which, I'm going to go out here and debug that. So after the next session, I'll be outside here if you want to see how that actually works. I can answer any questions. So catch me right after the next session. I'll be outside here. I'm beginning to be a big believer in shared hosting as a pain, too. It had to happen at an inopportune time because I said, well, no, I want my site up. Pardon? Actually, I was, but I changed the code for my shared hosting trying to troubleshoot. And I was like, oh, you dummy. And I got up there this morning not thinking. I said, you know, just right halfway through my presentation, I said, I changed the code. And didn't check it before my presentation. I said, I don't even have to ask. I know it's going to happen. I do too. But,
yeah.
But silly me is just, what did I say? Never buy a car.
A capture problem.
Well, I tell people,
yes.
Know, we use Ray
yes.
Camden and blog components and stuff like that. You ever think that's true?
Okay. Just pull me aside. I forgot my name tag, so I've got no idea where it went. So.
And then it hit me. I said, huh, I'm buying cars from a mechanic. I should have figured this one out. That's easy.
Uh-huh.
But I'll make that up.
You know, I always had the intention of going there every month, and, you know, I only made it there a couple of times. So. Oh, they went to that? I never even knew that. I didn't know they even did that.
But I wanted to come to Providence.
Shows how often I went.
I wasn't aware.
In the meantime, I mean, it was kind of late. And I lived off in the boonies, so it's kind of a pain.
Here I'm talking to Doug.
Well, I live past Creston, Nashville. I used to live in Nashville.
But after I correct that, I've got a thing of reaffording all that. Yep. But I'm going to set this session out because I'm going to go deal with the results of shared hosting. Which is a bummer. I wanted to sit in. Way too well. All right.
Anybody know off the top of their head when this thing kicks off? Is it 9:15? Okay,
where's the plug?
Just do a little dance.
Smile. Need a picture.
The funny thing is, this is the first time I've ever presented my technology to developers.
That's a good picture.
I'm used to presenting it to customers, to owners.
Man,
it's like, you know, this is weird. I've never presented my technology to developers.
What's your name?
Perfect. presentation today.
You bastard.
Pretty good. You know what I realized? I've never presented my technology to developers before. You know, I've done it to owners, business. I didn't sell it very easy. But, you know, I only had one issue. The code I updated to get my host working screwed up my local thing. Like, and I didn't test it before, so I just go to my live sites. Yeah, your lavalier, yeah. I'm comfortable with this thing. I don't even notice I have
one. It's okay. It's okay.
Check 1, 2, 3, 4. Check 1, 2.